Hello and welcome to the I Can Do podcast with Benjamin Lee. We're here to talk about tips and strategies to have an I Can Do mindset. Life is what you put into it. Get the most you can. Here's your host, Benjamin Lee.
Mick, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. It's my pleasure. It's good to talk to you again, Benjamin.
It is. Yeah, it's good to talk to you. It's good to see you again. I definitely appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. You know, I was listening, we were just talking about this, and there's a lot of different pathways that I want to go in this discussion tonight. I know we're going to be talking a lot about your book as well and your journey. I'm curious because you have such a great voice, and I know you're doing some voice work. I'm really curious, and I'm sure the audience will be as well. How did you get on this path? You have a couple of podcasts. How did you get on this path of podcasting and voiceovers? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's actually, I think, kind of an interesting question in a lot of ways, because I went to college, and I tell people, I said, I'm come from the era where not college material, and that was definitely my background. I had a half uncle actually just passed away. He's the only person I knew in either side of the family that even went to college, so it wasn't really something that I was thinking of. And of course, conditions have changed quite a bit, but my dad started taking night classes, and he actually started taking community college classes. So it was probably the first time in my life. He was like, "Who's this old guy? Why are you taking college classes, Dad?" But you know, he was trying to get ahead, just helping the family. So I started hanging out with them. They had a great library, started reading books. And so that was really the first time that I started thinking about college. But I had no idea what I wanted to do. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what degrees were. I didn't know what credits were. I had no idea of this thing. And it was really funny because I'd look at the schedule, and since I didn't have a college background or knew anybody, I would see in the college catalog, you have to go to class, and it would say T and R. So I think to myself, well, okay, there's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. There are no days that are R. So what the heck is that? I could figure out M, W, F. That meant Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I go, oh, Thursday. That's distinguish it from Tuesday. So that's how naive I was. But the point is, then I go to college. I start taking some classes. Didn't know what I wanted. I've always loved music. And I was always interested in music, hung out with a couple of high school buddies that were both musicians, and I wasn't, but I loved music. So I started taking what was music history and then some broadcasting classes as well. So it really got my interest into saying, well, what can I do with college education for the first time? And along those lines, it's another unusual thing that happened. I got called down to the counseling office the one day. I sit down before the advisor, and he says, "Do you know you have enough credits to graduate?" I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean? Credits, graduate? What are you saying? But he said, "You've taken so many classes that at the community college level, you should just declare a major because you're graduated now. So you can leave." So I go, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
And so from there, I said, well, it was either music history or just simply history, because I've always liked history. And I said, well, history is more general, and I don't know if I could actually be a musician or music history. So I declared my major as history and then moved on to a state college. But it also meant that the broadcasting was really the thing that got me going, because I said I got really interested in it, was a part of the station. So you go and move up through the ranks. You're a DJ, then you're music director, then program director. And I said, okay, this is something that I can find out. I've got some coaching ability and probably some managerial experience here. And that was great. And then, lo and behold, decades later, they have this thing called podcasting. And
yeah.
I go, oh, you know, and I'll say, well, you know, I'm the kind of guy that I have the face for radio, as they say. You know, so I never wanted to be in television. I never thought that was my place. I don't want to be in front of a camera, but I certainly don't mind being behind a microphone, because you can project and you can really get into it. And that's probably where the voice talent part came in, too, because if you read somebody's script, so I've done memoirs, for example, and this is a person's family. So I think, well, you know, I really want to do a good job on it, because this is now going to be a legacy item for children and grandchildren, and also being able to do accents, which is another part of my feature. So I can do a California accent or a Southern accent or a Western accent, which is also helpful, because sometimes in a memoir or in some type of book, you're actually imitating another character. So it truly is acting. It's just behind a microphone. So that's what got me going. And I said, podcasting's come around. I go, I've got a couple of things I'd like to do.
That's amazing. So let me ask you, did you DJ for a while? Were you working at a radio for a while? How did this eventually get to podcasting? When did you first launch your first podcast as well?
Yes. So here's what happened. So I said, okay, I've got an interest in radio because I really love broadcasting. I really like radio. And this is what they told me. So at this point, I'm about 19 or 20 years old. I'm in Southern California, right? And they say, okay, well, the way to get into radio broadcasting is to go to places like maybe Oklahoma or Kansas and then work your back in way into Southern California. I go, hold on a minute. Wait a minute. I'm like 19 or 20. Have you seen the girls at the beaches? I mean, do you know what Southern California is like? Are you kidding me? So nothing against Kansas or Oklahoma or anywhere else, but I didn't think that was a good option. I didn't necessarily want to go somewhere else and work my way back. And so that's why I gave up the idea of actually broadcasting. And then I said I majored in history. So I said, I'm going to go into a more academic field, which is history and historical background. And that's actually what I did. So when podcasting came about, I'm like, yeah, this is just ideal for me because you do the same things that you really did, except for, you know, now what they would have is a soundboard in the old days in broadcasting, and then you have now microphone and a laptop. But essentially, it's the same idea. It's projecting your voice and being able to deliver a message that people are hearing or listening. And one, here's a great example of actually Ronald Reagan. They called him the great communicator, right? He actually broadcast football games when he was in college. Wow. And he wasn't there. He wasn't at the stadium. He was on the phone with somebody who was actually at the stadium, and he broadcast that. So I said he got a lot of real good experience of being able to make things come alive. And in fact, this is something he wasn't even watching himself. So that's amazing. And that's probably why he was so good at being able to relate to people, and he's humorous, and people could understand him very well.
It's funny you mentioned President Reagan. I was just looking at an old book. It's not an old book, but I read it a while ago, The 80-20 Principle by Richard Koch. And he had mentioned Ronald Reagan with respect to how we utilize our time and, yeah, you know, focusing on the passions or things that bring us happiness and really that 80-20 rule. So now you bring up this example with him phoning in and calling a game. I think that is just amazing where he didn't even have to leave his own house to do that. So you talk about being effective with time. So public speaking is one of the most intimidating things for a lot of people.
Yes.
Whether
yes,
you're on a camera, microphone, especially if you're going to be recorded. Did you have any fears? Did you have any hesitation? Certainly you have an I can do mindset with just diving after things. How did you eventually get to that point? Was there any kind of hesitation before you actually dived in?
Well, I think that's the interesting thing. So when I've talked to people and I say, you know, just tell me, what do you think I am in terms of personality, introvert or extrovert? And when I talk to people, unusually, most people say, well, you're an extrovert. You know, you're easy to talk to. You know, you're really low key, you know, easygoing and what have you. And I go, well, here's the secret that I'm not necessarily telling you. I'm actually an introvert. I'm actually a really private person. Now, I've also taught as well, too. So that means a lot of public speaking, got to stand up in front of people. And I think what you do is it reminds me of Shakespeare, you know, this idea that we're merely players on the stage. And if you have that mentality, you can separate yourself. And that's where people will get dissuaded from public speaking, because the statistics have shown, you've done quizzes and they've said, which would you rather do, attend a funeral or speak in public? And people, I'll go to a funeral, you know? And that's really indicative. But what most people don't realize is you can distance yourself from this. So when you're speaking publicly or when you're speaking before a microphone, you know, I'm playing a part. You know, it's like Shakespeare, and yeah, what you're trying to do is you interact with an audience. You interact with their body language and their questions, mm-hmm, and the nuances and everything that have to go around good, effective communication. That's the key. So if you think only of yourself and think of your insecurity, well, it's going to be very difficult to speak in public.
Right. Yeah, that's so good. I've done some public speaking coaching, and there's a lot of stories that we can tell ourselves where, you know, while we're in the middle of talking or something like that, we're just assuming, and that's happened to me even with preaching. It's always interesting because I can see over 200 faces pretty much every Sunday, and I'm preaching or going down a path on a particular thought or subject or passage, and I see people, right? I can see what they're looking like, and you can pick up on some things sometimes. But there have been so many times where I was thinking one thing that the other person was thinking as if I could actually know exactly what they were thinking. And then it would be like totally something different. And so, yeah, there's a lot of different back and forth and turbulence that a lot of people experience that they really don't even have to. You know, if they will just stay in the moment, as you're saying, you know, you can kind of separate if you need to and just focus on, you know, something bigger, whether it's like recording a book or memoir for someone else, understanding the great significance of that.
Yeah. If you're preaching, the word, right?
So that's exactly right. Yeah.
The Spirit is doing the work. You are just merely the messenger. And that's the great thing about the Spirit. The Spirit moves. When I said my high school buddies, both of them were musicians. My best friend's a musician currently. And I've seen him and interact with people. And I said, in his performance, because he does a lot of Christian references and references to Jesus, which are flat out and blatant when in a rock setting, which is unusual. But the thing is, he has an effect on people. And I said, yeah, that's the Spirit moving. You don't have to worry about that part. You know, he who has ears to hear will hear. And that's what you keep in mind. It takes you out of the equation in a sense, mm-hmm. right? That I'm merely the vessel and let the message come through me and it will reach the people that it's supposed to. And speak to the last row. I mean, yeah, that way you're projecting and you know the message getting out there. Everybody up front, they're going to hear you. But if you talk to the back and you get people involved that way, you're more inclusive.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you remember any of the podcasts, the early podcasts that first had an impact on you?
Probably not, because I was just so excited about getting into podcasting. And we had mentioned just before we were chatting, and I said, yeah, there's the big stars. I mean, there's the Joe Rogans and stuff. And I'm never going to be that. And there's a lot of celebrities that are on podcasts. But people say, well, you know, they're going to take all the space up, but don't worry about it because they're celebrities. So what they're doing is just having a podcast along with some other things, and they're going to be successful no matter what because they've sold books, they're a public figure, they're a media person. Don't worry about that. What you need to do is just concentrate on what you can do and the uniqueness of who and what you are and your subject matter. So it's not so much an influence. It's just, to me, just went back to what I was saying. It's public broadcasting and being in a college radio environment, especially because it's very creative and you really could get all formats, all kinds of things. We had great things. We had Latin, we had jazz, we had classical, we had everything. And it was really awesome because it was a community-based radio station. And then you're really addressing your audience, which is awesome.
A lot of people may be wondering, or some may be wondering, all right, it's 2023. I have not started a podcast. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they're in college or out of college, wherever they may be in life. What are your thoughts? Is it too late for someone to start a podcast? Has the business or the this realm of opportunity, you know, capped? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I try to follow. It's now an industry. So yeah, I can talk about the podcasting industry right now. And that's why I made the comments that I wouldn't worry about the celebrities because yes, they're going to get the big deals. They're going to take a lot of audience. But what the statistics will show you and the research will show you that people are generally listening to more than one podcast. And if you were the person who has a unique area or a niche, as the saying goes in business, the riches are in the niches. You're going to be doing something that Joe Rogan can't do. So it's not to put Joe Rogan down. He's phenomenal. But you are going to be doing something that's not. That's why, you know, we're all a unique creation of God. You have some talent. You have some ability that no one else. I mean, think how unique the human being is. There's never anybody before you like you, and there's never anybody after you. So whatever that is and whatever passion you have, it's the same thing when people talk about writing. So I'm writing, you know, all the time. And I go, I don't understand writer's block. Anything that stops you. I mean, what's wrong? I mean, aren't you passionate about something? And if you're passionate about it, well, then you should be podcasting, you should be writing, you should be doing something that makes you want to get up in the morning. It reminds me of a great Seinfeld episode. You know, there's all kinds of great things there. And there's a scene between George and Kramer. And Kramer is kind of putting George on the spot, you know, like, what do you have to live for? And he goes, well, he's thinking about it. And he goes, well, you know, do you have a job? No. Do you have a girlfriend? No. Do you have any prospects? No. why do you get up? And he goes, well, I like to read the daily news. I mean, come on, you got to have something better than that. And so whatever drives you, whatever you really want to get excited about, that's where your podcast is. So to answer your question, no, it's not too late. It just means that podcasting as an industry is going to evolve as others have. And with the pandemic, it did really help because there are a lot more people listening to podcasts and they will listen to several podcasts. So if you have a general area, whether you're interested in sports or entertainment or religion or whatever it might be, you might be listening to more than one. So don't worry about that. Just do your thing.
That's awesome. Yeah, a lot of people look at other people as well. Imposter syndrome can be something that can hold people back. The comparison game, which you're never going to win that game. And that's, you're exactly right. People just need to get started, have confidence in themselves. Confidence is earned. And so, you know, for this confidence to grow, you have to take some of these baby steps. But when I started my podcast, it was really out of fear. I'd bought a microphone. My wife and I, we had been on another podcast. So that really encouraged me. You know what? Maybe I should start this. And I just sat on this microphone. It was in my closet for, I don't know, maybe close to a year. So eventually I just said, no, I want to give this a shot. So it's interesting. Sometimes the stories that can hold us back from just getting started. I love it now. It's been fantastic. I started doing more interviews as well in 2020, just meeting so many interesting people. So it's an amazing opportunity to connect with people around the world, grow. I love listening to podcasts. There's so much information and knowledge right at our fingertips. And so it's just a tremendous opportunity. I'm curious, you mentioned, Mick, you're writing all the time. I'm always curious about people's habits or routines. You have a book, Burning America. And tell us a little bit about this habit of writing all the time. What does that look like? How did you go down this path of writing books? I know you mentioned that you loved books. Walk us through this part of your journey as well.
Sure. So I'm one of those people, I'm a bibliophile. So I have over 4,000 books myself. And wow. I got a catalog. I had to go to this thing called Library Thing, because what I would do is not remember exactly what books I have or what books I've read or when I read them. So it's a cataloging service and you can just catalog all your books. That's how I know how many I've got. So there's over 4,000.
Okay. Hold on a second. Let me interrupt. Sure. What is this catalog that you have? Because I counted my books. I felt really impressed. I have about, and this is a comparison game, right? Close to about 1,300. 4,000. What's the catalog resource you're using again?
It's called Library Thing. So just librarything.com.
That is so awesome. Okay, librarything.com. How long has it taken you to get 4,000 books? I know I'm kind of dovetailing.
Well, that's because I'm not a young person. I'm accumulating. The one I keep with me is actually, there's a little bookcase that's with me. I had it when I was a kid. So I was one of those people, like I said, I'm from the not for college material. So no one thought I was going to college, but I always liked to read. And fortunately, my parents did like to read. So they encouraged my sister and I. So we've always been big readers. And I found the subjects I was interested in. So I've always accumulated books. And then over the course of the years, it's like, well, I mean, you just keep hanging on to them and hanging on to them. When I got to Library Thing, then I actually know what I have, which is really great about it. And I'm accumulating them all the time. But I mean, it also meant that you can catalog by subject and what area. So mine are going to be heavy on history and religion, Christianity, and things like that. And then I always tell people, of course, I'm a recovering academic as well, too. I was in academia for a long time. So what do you do in academia? But you read a lot of books, and you have a lot of books, and you accumulate a lot of books. So that's kind of what it started. So it's really been numerous decades that took me to accumulate that many.
So you have 4,000 plus books. Thank you for that resource. I'm definitely going to look into that. Is it on an app or website? Or
it's a website, yeah. So if you join it, it's just something where you can just put in, and it's pretty handy because if you have a topic or a book, and you can just say if it's on Amazon, it pretty much populates it itself. And then you can put in information like I want to review books and I want to also put in things that I know about that book or that particular author. And you can put those in there. But the grunt work is that, you know, the date, the publication and hardcover, softcover, all that stuff, that's all done populated automatically. So it's pretty handy to have.
Okay, I gotcha. So writing, when did you decide that you wanted to write? I know that you have taught in a school setting. Obviously, there's a passion for reading books. What does your writing routine look like now, and how many books have you published or written?
So here's the deal. So, okay, I did a lot of publishing and academic work, right? And I go, I actually had a friend that just said, you know, is your dissertation available online? Are you kidding me? There's probably like three people in the last 30 years who wanted to read that thing. And I'll tell you a quick story. So I take the kid, I had a daughter. So I take the daughter to UCLA where I went. I got my terminal degree. Doesn't mean I'm dead, and I'm not there yet, but it means the last degree. So I'm going to be the big shot, right? I'm going, okay, we're going to take a look at my dissertation. You know, we'll go into UCLA's library and we'll pull it off the shelf. So we go to the librarian and she looks at it up, and it's a dissertation, so not that many people read it. She goes, oh yeah, that's in the annex. That'll take a day or so to get here. And I go, forget that. It's like, okay, I can't show off, and I don't have it. I don't have it right. It's not like it's flying off the shelf. But when I thought about writing, so I've done quite a bit of writing when it comes to book reviews and things of that nature, because that's where a lot of times that's where the books come in too, because the publishers send you books to review. And then for academic publications, I also do that as well. But it also meant that when it comes to writing, there are certain topics and certain things that are of interest to me. So the novel came out last year, and it's on a particular, a very emotional subject. And I found other people that were running into this same thing, because actually I first wrote that novel just for me. It was completely catharsis. So after this really traumatic event, it took me about 2.5 years, and I sat on it for a long time. But lo and behold, about 20 or so years later, my best buddy experienced just almost virtually the same exact factual information that happened to me. And I go, this probably could help other people. I should get this thing out there. And that's what got me to publish it. So the title is Burning America, but it's also now going to be a part of what I call and consider a trilogy, because there's three areas I feel I can really speak about responsibly. Those family, which is the novel. Then I'm also going to be talking about work-life balance and company life. So that's, again, part of the Burning America series. And then also, since my training is actually academically in history, there's going to be one on history as well. So there's three parts of this. It's a trilogy. And then in the meantime, I've also got two other projects. Aren't you glad you asked about what writing I'm doing?
Two other
projects. One, now I'm working with a publisher about a songwriter that is in a British music scene, or that's really what his background is. So I'm writing that book. So I've finished that. That'll probably be out before the end of the year. And I've taken the novel and adapted it as a screenplay. So I'm also going to try to have a film version. So there's a lot of things in terms of being active, I guess, an active intellect. So, I mean, that's what it comes down to. Whatever people are thinking about, and I think that goes back to whatever your passion is. I mean, if you can't find what it is you're around for. I mean, we're on this earth for a very limited amount of time. Mm-hmm. And especially the older you get, you realize this, right? So I'm looking at my life as like, I'm on the twilight here, right? I mean, just statistically, it's not going to be forever, but I'm going to have as much of a ride as I can. And that means there are certain things that I think can help other people, certain things that I've learned in my life, and certain areas that I feel like I can talk about responsibly. And those are the things I'm going to publish on. So that's what really explains all those different components of what I think I can address effectively.
Thank you for sharing that. Two questions come up. Can you tell the audience a little bit more about the title Burning America? You know, how did you get that title? I know when you and I talked first, when we just introduced ourselves to one another, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago, you gave me some additional details about the story. Are you willing to share more about what is Burning America and why that title? That's my first question. Can you give us some thoughts on that?
Sure. And I think this is probably my concern for America in general, right? So I think what you can find by talking with people, regardless of your background, regardless of who and what you are, you're going to say, we're in trouble. There are some things that are really gone astray in this country. And I go, yes, I am really passionate about my country. I feel like, you know, I won the lottery. I came in as the greatest history in the nation, greatest nation in the history of the world. So I just got lucky. But I am disturbed by the kinds of things that I'm seeing. And that's the title to me, is Burning America, that the country is falling apart. But I also think there are solutions and there are ideas that I have that I would love to share with people to say, I think I've learned these things. Perhaps they can help you. Let me address them. So the novel, the first one part that came out is, long story short, because it's all in the novel, but I pulled up in my driveway the one day and everything was gone. And literally, when I say everything, I mean everything. So I could see looking in the window, the furniture is gone. Call the bank. Bank account emptied, nothing's left. I had absolutely nothing. Well, I had $5.85 to my name. So yeah, I did have cash. That was it. And the most disturbing thing was, of course, that our daughter was gone. She was taken from the home and my wife had done that. So I said, well, I've got a problem here. I am not really that concerned about the property, the money. All that stuff is replaceable. And yes, it can be very difficult, but you can do that again, right? I mean, it's renewable. You've done it once, do it again, so that's fine. But really, the novel is about how, for 3.5 years, I had to fight what I consider the family court system, and that means everybody. That's everybody. So the subtitle of the novel is In the Best Interest of the Children. The reason I have that as a subtitle, because in a custody or parental alienation scenario, that's what everybody tells you. And you find out, well, that's not true at all. No one's working for the children. Everybody is working for themselves. And in this case, what I found was, you know, the lawyers, the counselors, the judges, the masters, everybody involved has got some interest, and they're yanking everybody in every direction they can, and it's not really helpful. So the family court system is a very corrupt system. It doesn't work. And what it happens is that for mostly it's men, but women as well, too, are really not coming out with a satisfactory situation that are in the best interest of a child or children. And that's the whole thing. And I would like it because I'd say, you know, regardless of your politics, like, what difference does it make? You know, in a divided country of which we are, obviously, what difference does it make? Does it really matter when you have this cliche that everybody will say that children are our future? Yeah, they are. And you know what? That means we all should be united on this. We can be divided on all kinds of things and all kinds of issues, but the raising of children and the next generation and grandchildren, the heritage that you're passing on, this is really important. To me, this is something which unites us and should bring us together to find some really good solutions. And so what we're doing in this effort is really trying to look at the legislation in the 50 states, because it's complicated. There's 50 states, but to have some type of 50-50 arrangement so that the child or children can have access to both a mother and a father. And what happens is that, unfortunately, one parent is alienated and there's an alienator factor that keeps the child or children from the other parent. And it's just wrong. The child needs access to both, even in the worst examples. I mean, I've worked in urban areas of the country, and I've talked to kids, you know, dad's in jail, dad's in prison, but that individual is still the father. If nothing else, maybe they even can say, don't do what I did. Well, that's great advice, but the child needs to hear that. And that connection that they have with parent is, it's blood, you know, it's in their DNA. That's what's so important about it. And they need to hear what parents have to say to them, regardless of what they've done or whatever good or evil they've done in their life. They need access to them.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That sounds like a very powerful book, Burning America. That's something I know that's obviously close and near and dear to your heart. So thank you very much for sharing that. A second question, the word passion has come up a few times in this brief conversation. When did you know that, you know, you've shared a little bit about voice work and being a history professor. One of the things a lot of people may struggle with is this idea of what exactly is my passion? And I like listening to and reading Cal Newport's books like Deep Work, Digital Minimalism, Work So Hard That They Can't Ignore You. He's got a podcast as well. He talks a lot about that because he talks about don't always follow your passion. Or because he says a lot of people say, like at a, you know, college graduation, the speech, follow your passion, right? Do what that passion is. And his philosophy, if I'm saying it correctly, is, well, maybe, but that's not necessarily like the only thing you can do, because you actually may be in a job or a situation that's not exactly that passionate thing. But if you still work hard and are engaged in deep work and things like that, there's still a lot of good that can come out of that. Someone who's listening, maybe it's a college student, maybe you're having coffee with someone and they're asking you for some guidance about, how do I find my passion? I agree with you. We're only here for a limited amount of time. This world is not our home. It's short. Life is short in general. What wisdom would you share with that person who's having coffee with you about, how do I find my passion? How do I know if I'm on the right track?
Yeah, probably I would switch a little bit in that case to say, what's your purpose? And you go, okay, I'm going to look at it because I'm sort of a God-centered person. So, I mean, there are certain things that God has set up. So when I'm talking about why the country is falling apart, that's my phrase of burning America. Well, you know, is this a country which is following the principles that God had intended? Well, obviously it's not. That was the purpose. And if you look at things like the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, I mean, this was Martin Luther King did. He looked at the Declaration and he goes, well, look at this. I mean, this is very a God-centered type of document. And everything about him reflects that. So I try to remind people, because I'm old enough, I remember that era. I was around. And I said, look, here's a gentleman who was a minister, first of all. And, you know, his daddy was a minister. His grandpa was a minister. His brothers were ministers. You know, everybody in his family. But somehow they've kind of lost that Judeo-Christian ethic and the fact that this was really his central purpose in life. And he was the one who was starting to talk about it. And America said, yeah, you know, as a question of conscience, yes, he's on the right track. That's what was so important. So I would say to an individual, what's your purpose? I mean, why are you alive? It's the $64,000 question. Like, why are you here? You know, because I completely agree with you. I think, you know, the grass withers and man is gone. We know this. It's a short life. So it's not necessarily passion. I agree with that's a very valid point, because people might be passionate about something and it would be have no useful value whatsoever. You can't make a living at it. It's not really helpful to anybody else. So I wouldn't suggest doing that, because you're probably being led astray. However, you are here for a reason. That's the uniqueness of every individual. And that's why I've said, this is what people have to recognize. You're here for a reason. If you can find that reason and getting up in the morning to fulfill that, you're going to have a very happy and fulfilling life. So I would tell young people, which I've advised them for a long time when I was in academia, I said, find something that you're passionate about and you'll never work a day in your life. And that's really key. And also along those same lines, since I was in a lot of urban areas, that people, well, I don't have the connections. You don't have the education. I'm from a poor area. I said, okay, here are things. I used to have this thing that I'd send out. There's like 10 ideas here that take absolutely no talent whatsoever. It's a great list. It's like, show up on time, be accountable, do what you say what you're going to do. I mean, all these very simple things. And I said, well, it doesn't mean that it's a formula for success per se. However, if you apply these basic principles often enough, like that comment, do work so hard that they can't ignore you. Yeah. If you outperform, well, of course, you're going to be successful. So Jack Welch, who's a leading CEO, and he trained something like 35 of the 38 top CEOs in the entire country at one time. Pretty basic, but he'd say, overperform, underpromise. Say, this is what I'm going to do, but do more than that. And then you're going to make people happy. Well, a worker, if you have that attitude, you're going to be successful. And it's not a guarantee, but it's certainly going to get you on the right road to get the attention of people that you need to get attention of.
Yeah, no, that's so good. I appreciate that. And I'm teaching Genesis in a meetup Zoom session. And that's some of the things I've kind of talked about, right? Where, you know, we get all of these big life questions answered, you know, if we're willing to obviously take the time to read. And even with in the beginning, before there was sin, work was a good thing. It was from God.
Yeah.
And it's been from God. And, you know, there are passages like Colossians chapter 3 about how we work, working as if we're doing it unto the Lord, which we should be doing it to him or for him ultimately. I love that idea about the ideas too. I had read a book about just writing, can you write down 10 new ideas every day? Maybe it's already been done. You know, it doesn't matter how crazy the idea may actually be, but just kind of getting the creative juices flowing. And there's something really important about that. What resonated with me as well, obviously the spiritual component, but also I grew up, my father was not around. My mom used to clean houses. She had an office type job. And I can remember growing up, we called it turnover. And so during the summer months, she would get contracts to clean college apartments. So at the University of Illinois, and we would clean these apartments. They were extremely dirty. You know, students would sublease them and things like that. And me and my sister, we would help her clean. And so we didn't go to camps and things like that during the summertime because we were working just to break even or to make ends meet. And so looking back at that, though, that definitely helped me out with my work ethic. It definitely helped me out with, you know, there is a way. God provided. I saw that looking back all these years later. We were on public aid for a while. So there's something to be said about that as well, where working hard and being diligent, like what you were just talking about. And the other thing, too, and this is where you and I connect for sure, we would go to the Urbana Free Library quite a bit. The library was just one of my favorite places to go. It's been so amazing just the different connections that I've been able to meet or have or get through books. And that's something that's available for everybody for free if you're willing to go down that path. So I really appreciate that insight with that, because I think sometimes young people in particular as well, you know, just kind of assume that you're instantly going to have this perfect job or the very first job that they get out of college, everything is just going to kind of work out exactly like that. Typically it just doesn't, but the intangible things that you were talking about, being on time, actually caring for your craft, all of those things will go a long way. And even experimenting and saying, you know what, maybe let me try this over here. You may have this passion that you weren't even aware of. And so you have to be able to expand your horizon as well.
For sure. Yeah. When I said that, it reminds me again, it's kind of like a family story. So my grandmother cleaned houses, and I go, well, you know, depending on the kid who was around at the time, because she had several kids, well, they accompanied her and she cleaned houses. I tell people, okay, my dad passed away, but God rest his soul. But I mean, here's the example. He's graduated from high school same year that my mom and dad went to the same high school in 1953. And they had kids right away. My sister and I came. They're 20 years old. They had two children. Well, my dad, he started cleaning toilets. He was a maintenance guy. And that's how he started. He needed a job. So he didn't start at the top. He only had a high school education. But he applied himself. He worked really hard. He started taking night classes. He was a printer. And what he started doing is, he said, very clever, because he said there's about 12 different machines on the printing floor. And he started taking night classes to figure out how to run each one of those 12 machines. Well, now you become indispensable, because who's the guy who knows how to run all 12 machines on the factory floor? My dad. Yep. So they had an opportunity to move to California, which was their big dream. They opened up a new plant. Well, guess who they picked? I go, yeah, because my dad, who had been working on this for some time and was very diligent about it and kept applying himself, he started seeing that he became indispensable. So that's the idea. That's the work harder. Yes, you're not just doing the job, which is what they expect, but do even more. So my sister and I came up when my dad passed away. We both came up with the same story. I'll tell you what's your favorite story of your dad. Like, well, it's a great one, because we grew up in New Jersey. Terrible storm. Snowstorm was really horrible. They didn't plow the streets. Wasn't done well in those days. So what did my dad do? He got up at 4 o'clock in the morning and he walked 16 miles to work in order to get to work. The boss was there. He had the key. He unlocked the door. My dad put in his 8 hours. Only person who showed up after 8 hours, locked up the door, and he walked 16 miles home. Now, that has got to make an impression on somebody. So yeah. When there was an opportunity to come around and move to California, you know, company picked him, because then it became more obvious. If you're willing to do that for us and actually work when there's a huge barrier, it tells you something about his mentality and how he applied himself. And that's why I'm saying there's no talent per se. He didn't have to do anything spectacular, but he showed up. It reminds me of the statement of Groucho Marx, you know, 90% of success in life is showing up on time.
Yes.
There you go. Proof positive.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Can you share with us some of your habits, in particular with writing? I'm very curious with writing and podcasting. What are you doing? Are you blocking hours every day? Do you have some kind of ritual? Can you walk me through that in the audience? How are you able to stay on this consistent path of what you're doing?
It's kind of a combination. I think it's an interesting one. So I'll go back to when I wrote my dissertation. So I said, okay, guys, what is a dissertation? Tell me what this thing is. And they said, well, a dissertation is a unique contribution to scholarship. So that means that nobody else has ever published exactly what you came up with in the same exact way. And I go, great. Now, the second question I have is, how short does it have to be? In other words, how long is what people will say? Now, tell me how short. I want the shortest, the most succinct, but a unique contribution. And the insight comes almost just one of those weird creative things that just pops into your head, which it did. So I had a creative insight that just like a flashlight, you know, went off, or a flashbulb went off. I go, there's the insight. That's it. Now, it's going to take me 3 to 4 years to do the language work, the coursework, and the actual writing of this. But you got to keep your eyes on the prize. You already know you got the insight. Now what you do is you put the work ethic applied to the insight in which you have. And I think books come that way. So when I think about the things that I feel I can say responsibly, when you were talking about work, it actually says, and that's actually the idea. You get the thesis of my Burning America about the companies. It's ora et labora. What the monks used to do is pray and work. Ora et labora. Now, what do most people do? I mean, I'm not necessarily they have to pray, because yes, this is what I choose to do, but other people have to be able to disengage from their work, think, meditate, prayer, something along those lines in order to refresh their batteries, get re-energized and revivified. But whenever you get an idea for a book, if that creativity and that spark might come to you, and then you start realizing, you start putting it in place. The book that I'm writing on the musician, the songwriter, well, I'm going through every single song that he's ever written, but that's the work of it. But it also means that it's a unique volume, because no one has ever written an entire book on every one of his songs. So there's the creative insight that I've had, and I'm going to argue this is why this is a unique songwriter. But then you put in the work to say, all right, I'm going to systematically go through every song. So I think there's always a combination in the writing. If it's a fictional work or a creative work, that creativity is sometimes what hinders people, right? They think they have to be creative all the time. Well, you know, nobody is that creative, you know. Right. It means that you have to have some sort of insight, and there's your thesis, that's your creative spark, and then you do the framework around that, so a structure. So when I teach a writing, I have the 12 steps in the hero's journey, because in the hero's journey by Joseph Campbell, which has been applied to Hollywood and memoirs and fictional books and screenplays or what have you, any of those things, you take the 12 stages of the hero's journey and you plug them in. So if you want to tell a good story, here are the 12 stages. That's your creative input. And then you go and do the work, which will apply to that creative spark that you had, which is the inspiration for the writing in the first place.
Wow. So you mentioned, like with the example with the monks, pray and work, having some time to disconnect with the work to rejuvenate, talking to God, obviously, in prayer. Have you ever experienced burnout? And if you have, what did that look like? And how long did that take you before you were able to get back into the groove of things?
I think to answer that question, it's sort of like once you get the system down, I think then you've got it. And I think that's the key. That's why I would say I'm hopefully that the book like this could be helpful and useful to people, because every job has got what I would call work attached to it, right? There's some things that you just really don't like to do. Well, that's the work aspect. And not to let yourself get distracted by that, because there also are some things about any job that you might enjoy and you might really like to. So that's what keeps you going. But every job, or people would say, like, you know, I don't really like my job. They're, you know, well, every job is going to have a work aspect to it, right? I'm sorry to say, like, you know, everything can't be all fun and games. But what it can do is to keep you going on the right path. And there's some really basic things that I would say that if you have a healthy attitude and you're physically healthy, those things are really going to help. It prevents the burnout. So I'm not going to tell you anything different that, you know, probably your mama told you or your doctor is going to tell you, you know, the right diet, exercise, get enough sleep, all of those basic things. I mean, think of the immune system. If you keep your immune system up, all of those are basic things, because every time you begin to fret, every time you begin to worry, I mean, this is why the Bible is so helpful. I mean, look at what it says. Think about the good things. Think about positive things.
Yes.
Of course. Yes. Because if you have a healthy mental attitude and physically you are strong, that means your immune system is also going to help you. And that prevents the kind of burnout and that kind of prevents the kinds of things that really cut into your productivity. Those are the basics. Those are the things that will help prevent that. So I don't really get burnt out. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I find things that I've got a number of projects. I just juggle them. And I think most people can do that as long as you get the basics, as long as you are doing the kinds of things that you should be doing. Because people get burnt out because they get sick and they get, you know, they're sleepy. Well, you're not getting enough sleep. I mean, you know, those are things that are under your control. And you can bring them into control. It takes a certain amount of discipline and what have you. So, I mean, I'm a very disciplined person. I mean, that's just, you know, my personality. Because if you focus on things and you know what you need to do, it's just a matter of, well, okay, do it, regardless of how you feel sometimes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to say I'm feeling happy. I don't. I don't feel happy all the time. I don't feel positive all the time. But I take the appropriate and right action. And what people might say, it's the fake it to make it. Sure, you know, just do the right thing, just like you would in terms of how you define what integrity. Integrity is when you're doing the right thing, regardless of who's watching or who knows. And I actually give you a story about integrity, doing the right thing. So I attended a university back east, and there was a very preeminent historian. He's a church historian. And the time that I knew him, he was probably in his 90s. It was a cold and wintry day. It sounds like a novel. It was a cold and wintry day. And I saw him on the other side of the campus. And I did. I saw him and I recognized him. There was nobody on campus. I looked around. There's probably, you know, him and me. And that was it. He's walking by a trash can. And there was trash near the trash can. So here's the scene. Elderly man, preeminent historian, well-known, accomplished scholar. He saw trash on the ground. And he bent over and picked it up and put it in the trash can. I go, that's integrity, because what he did, not knowing or not thinking anybody's watching, he wasn't doing it to be seen or to be known. He was doing it was the right thing. So likewise, in life, you know you need enough sleep. You know you should be eating right. You know you should be exercising. So there's really no excuse. And the limitations that you have physically and mentally and spiritually are something that you are doing that is holding you back, and that's what you're in control of. Take control of that. You take control of your life. You'll be more productive.
Yeah, I love it. I recently had a guest, Maxim, and we were talking about being motivated versus committed. It reminds me a lot of what you just said, right? Motivation is going to kind of go away eventually.
Sure.
But if you're committed to something, then that changes everything, whether you feel happy or whatever the case may be. And you know, the Bible talks about the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. And there's a lot of people talking about discipline and self-control. Jocko Willink talks about discipline is freedom, which I agree. There's a lot of great things that happen when we do have discipline. A lot of people think routine or discipline is boring, not exciting. But I agree with you. When I stay on track, things that may actually be somewhat routine or really not something super big every single day, but you just keep stacking those habits and routines. And it is amazing to see, you know, how much you're able to get done. So really appreciate you sharing that. Well, this has been a great conversation. I think we could probably talk for a couple of hours, but been able to learn a lot from you. And I appreciate your zeal and your passion for what you're doing. Any final thoughts?
It's been my pleasure because, you know, shouldn't say this in front of the person. It sounds kind of corny, but you're a really interesting guy and really easy to talk to. And, you know, I love the fact that your background, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, you can preach and you have a grasp of those really important spiritual things that people need to be aware of. And I certainly hope people will take the message seriously because it is a serious message, but it's an important one. It really is the good news. I mean, to quote the cliche, it's the good news. Life is better and life can be better. And if you follow the path that's outlined before you, you're going to have a happier life.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Mick. I appreciate you.
Likewise. Been fun. Thank you, sir.
Once again, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. If you are in the need or are looking for more motivation in your life, feel free to check out my website, benjaminlee.blog. where you can find hundreds of encouraging, motivational blog posts on a variety of subjects. You can find all of my books, which can also be found on Amazon.com, and other podcast interviews with a variety of people. I hope this helps. Please leave me a rating and a review. I can do, and so can you. Take care, and God bless.